On number 15, this is open public input, and we have several participants this morning, and all of you know the rules. 3 minutes, you'll hear the bell. Please conclude your comments. We got four chairs, so I'm going to call all four of you up at once. Kurt Kramer, I know he's here, but I don't see him. Wayne Klein. Robert Bosalil.
That's pretty close.
That sound all right?
That's close.
Now, that was an uneducated guess.
Was I closer when I did it? Or?
It's Bosalil.
Bosalil. And Lee Whitman.
Sorry, make sure they pull the mics up.
Well, I know, I thought about that. Mr. Kramer, you're first, please.
Good morning, Director, Commissioners. It's a pleasure to always be here. Sorry I was out of the room. I took a little walk to stretch my back, just because that's what I do with my age. I'm here to talk about the Skagit catch and release steelhead season. Normally, I've talked to you folks a number of times, and I tend to be pretty much data-oriented in my testimonies. I've sent you guys an email with some of my thoughts. I hope it was helpful. If not, I'd be happy to answer any questions. But I thought today I'd talk about something a little different, and that's the social value of these kinds of fisheries. I made a special point in April of 2018, and again this year in February, March, and April, to talk to as many anglers as I could talk to that fished that Skagit catch and release season. And almost universally, the people were excited to be there, happy to be there, and extremely thankful for the opportunity to be there. And that was, and probably 100 people I talked to, that was a commonality. And I don't hear that a lot about outdoor recreations in this state, whether it's hunting or fishing, and I do a lot of both. It's really important. I think I had a conversation in late April with a friend of mine and a friend of his that flew in from out of state. The friend guided on this gadget for 20 years while it was catch and release. When we lost the season before, he moved out of the state. He flew back for just to fish 5 days with his friend on the river. And it was fun talking to them about how the river had changed, the anglers that were on the river, the old anglers that were no longer with us, the friends they saw, and all the young new anglers that they were seeing on the river. And they were excited about the potential for those young anglers to become the future of our sport. And then they were excited about their fishing, of course, but the friend from out of state was more excited about being able to come back next year. He was planning next year with a little more notice. He was going to come back for 2 weeks. He was going to bring his wife, and he was extremely excited to be able to introduce his wife to the fishery that he lived on for so many years. And the only reason he didn't bring him this year is it just logistically didn't put together without the notification. So if he knows seasons are coming ahead of time, it's really, it's important to those guys. And as I pointed out in my email to you, there's a surprising number of people that come from out of state. And that's, infinitely valuable to the people of the state. And I think fish management in the state has reached the point that you guys as policy and decision makers have to make a decision. Is fishing a legitimate use of some of our resource out there? I argue that it is. Your policies argue that it is. Our actions as a society, in some cases, the actions of the agency and the commission, speak otherwise. Instead of looking for every opportunity we can to have fishing, we seem to often take the easy path out and lose opportunities. I can't tell you how many of my friends have spent more and more of their recreational dollars leaving the state to Alaska, Montana, or elsewhere. And given what we once had, that's just an absolute crime. And so I ask you guys the question, is fishing a part of our future? If not, we're going to lose the advocates like Wayne and I, and we're not going to develop new ones. We need to get those guys on the river. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Commissioner Kehoe.
Thank you, Mr. Kramer, for your testimony and for your work in promoting the steelhead fishery in the Skagit. So I guess, and you're aware of the budget constraints that the department is operating under. Okay. And you're aware, of course, too, that we had a recreational fee package that was part of the budget ask. That was not funded. And so I guess my question is, and given I recognize and appreciate your opinions about the value of the fishery and also appreciate your communications with folks, I guess my question is, when you talk to people, does the subject of getting out and supporting the department within the legislature in terms of funding, does that enter into the conversation? And I'd just be curious to know that.
First, to be up front, I spent a day during this legislation in Olympia with a friend of mine from Skagit County, and we made a specific point to talk to all of our elected representatives or their staff in session. Obviously, that's a difficult time, but we were down there. In fact, I think I met you down for lunch while we were doing that. I think that's really important, and it's tough to get people engaged. It's tough to get people engaged in everything, but I talk to people, and they can recognize the value of that. It's hard. It's kind of a chicken and egg thing. How do we get people engaged if their perception is they're losing? And that's a really tough thing. I think the one of the big fights that or hurdles that you're looking at is communications with the users and being able to make that case. And I've made the case on a number of things. And you're right. It's really difficult sometimes to get converts. And I think the surest way to get those converts is to develop passionate advocates. Now, sometimes they're going to disagree with you, and I'm a firm believer that healthy debate is really, really helpful and healthy. But you got to have those debates, and to have those debates, we have to have managers and we have to have advocates to do it. And I'm a big believer in developing advocates.
Go ahead, do it, Bob, as a follow-up.
Yeah, just to follow up, and just so you know, you're aware, we had this budget discussion yesterday, and I mean, it's clear that in order for this fishery that you are passionate about and others, the department needs more funding to make that happen. So just want to make sure that you're aware of that and that that you do what you can to spread.
I've had a number of discussions with a variety of folks of looking at alternative ways to fund it. You know, if the agency's looking at exploring that, you know, putting together some sort of work sessions to do that is possible. You know, there's the ranges from, you know, donations to an authorization program like the waterfowl program where you charge everybody $10 for a catch and release authorization to generate some funds. Be more than that, I've talked to some people that would be willing to spend $100 for a catch and release permit if they get access to it. Limited entry there's options on the table, but you got to have the discussions. And the more we have committed to the fishery, the better discussions. Frankly, if we don't have those discussions and we don't restore fishing, the fishing and in the long term, the resources of this agency, and this state is doomed. The trajectory in virtually all of our key anadromous fish populations of Puget Sound is depressing at best and actually alarming at worst. And I'll argue that we can't afford not to have these kinds of fisheries.
Commissioner Graybill.
Kurt, thank you again for traveling up here and for the time that you've spent dedicated to not just the Skagit fishery, but others, and your background is important to listen to. However, I am alarmed when I hear people say that the department's in the business of taking away opportunity. That is the opposite of what is true. In my opinion, we're seeking every avenue to maintain opportunity for anglers, hunters, wildlife viewers, whatever. That's our job. And we're not in the business of closing fisheries. And as Commissioner Kehoe mentioned, without the support of the public to influence the legislature to give us the kind of funding we need, our hands are tied. It's not the easy path, Kurt. Believe me. We're doing everything that we can, and you know how complicated this can be. It seems like it defies logic. I understand that.
First of all, let me. I was reporting, not slicing my personal view. I understand how complex this is and how difficult it is to support the activities, and I understand the reason some of these we're losing some of our revenue. I understand that very well. I spend 400 to 500 hours every year of my own time advocating for these kinds of fisheries because I believe strongly that it's an important thing to have to preserve these opportunities. The fact of the matter is I virtually gave up steelhead fishing in 96. I stay engaged in this thing because I think it's the tool to move forward. I mean, I'd be perfectly happy if I never steelhead fished again, but I think we've got to move these things forward. You're exactly right. You know, I understand how you're moving heaven and earth to keep fisheries going, but that's the communication failure that you've had is we're not you're not getting that to the public. And that's my point, is you need to get that communication to the public of what's going on. If you don't fail that, you know, you're just going to go backwards. And we, you know, because of conservation crises, we've seen nothing but reactive management. If we could change that to a proactive approach with a lot better communications on the whys and the wherefores and what the difficult hurdles are, then we have a chance to have really informed discussions and move forward. That is my opinion. The further comment about the people dropping out, that was reported.
You said something in passing that really really caught my ear, and had this discussion in the bar the other night with
that's where the best place is.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at too, with our biologist. And when you said limited entry, because he was explaining the nuts and bolts of how come it was going to cost $250,000 to monitor this, and I'm going, as a business person, anytime I can take a liability and turn it into an asset in my world, it's a double money. Instead of money going out, it's money coming in. And I know it's breaking the paradigm of a fishery, but in the hunting world, we live with limited access on a daily basis. And it's one of those things on a fishery like this where if you do put it on a permit basis, you don't have to charge an arm and a leg, but more than cover your costs for it. And even if you add an extra buck or two and dedicate those funds to that resource, then you can know when the people are there. Yeah, it's on a draw. You may want to go fishing. You're going to have to put in, and it's going to be the luck of the draw when you get to go, but you still have the opportunity to do it. And I say it's totally fitting, but I still think on these rivers like this where they have to screw the numbers right down and keep very close track, this might be an opportunity, and there again, generate a little money in the process.
I think you're exactly right. It is an opportunity. I mean, clearly the big game seasons demonstrate that. It's an anathema to what I believe in, but it is an option. And if we're going, if that is a path forward, then I think you're obligated to the users to present that in some discussion forum so that we can consider the pros and cons, why you're considering that to the more traditional way, if that's the case. So that's part of the information to getting folks out to make informed decisions. And again, I mean, those are the discussions I'd love to see, and to the extent that I might be helpful, I'd be more than willing to participate in those.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thanks for coming over to testify, and thanks for being an effective advocate for this fishery through time. You mentioned communication being a difficult challenge. When did you first hear that the Skagit catch and release fishery might be a possible casualty of all the budget problems that were associated with this year's process?
I first saw that on a internal email that was posted in one of the chat forums.
About 3 weeks ago, probably.
And you know, in part because of my advocacy, I have my antennas up pretty high, and chase rumors pretty well. And I understand lots of them are rumors, but this seemed to have some legs to it.
Mentioned in your testimony that anglers would be willing to pay maybe $100, you know, to provide the funding necessary to monitor the fishery and assure that opportunity. As you're probably aware, the Columbia River endorsement, which did exactly that, it provided the funding for the federally mandated monitoring, enforcement, and other items that are required to conduct fisheries. And that, again, was another fatality of the budget cut. And in fact, it was targeted by some of the advocacy groups be removed. And that was one where anglers paid their own freight.
I understand, and I was a supporter of that. In fact, when I was in the legislature, I actually talked to my representatives about that in support of that. It's not, you know, the position that some recreational people took is, you know, not representative of everybody. And again, I think if that issue had been more on the political radar of the anglers, and it's really tough to get it there. I understand perfectly the apathy of the vast majority of the anglers, and that's going to be a heavy lift to do it. But, you know, without that information getting to folks, it's hard for them to become effective advocates for even things like that to their benefit because they don't understand it. I've talked to, you know, when I worked for the agency, I gave over 1,000 presentations to sports clubs, and I talked to sportsmen a lot. And it was, I could not talk to them in biology. I just could not. I had to figure out a way to talk to the layman in their terms. If I could dummy it down to a sixth grade education and put the options and the understanding in those kinds of terms and how it affected their daily lives, we could have some very meaningful discussions. If I couldn't do that, the eyes glazed over and we had nothing. And that's my pitch for communications is you got to make that. And again, I'll argue, you know, maybe ineffectively that the Skagit is one of the tools to generate that, begin that process.
Thank you very much. Wayne.
Good morning, Commissioners.
Director.
Not sure where to begin. Let me start off. I listened to the conference call you guys had a few weeks ago, and I just want to make it clear that I'm not here to attack anyone personally. I do want to attack some of the things that I heard, though. I kept hearing over and over on that conference call, the season is 6 weeks. It is not 6 weeks. If I jump forward in the calendar, and next year it would be one day shy of 13 weeks. So right there, you've gotten over twice your bang for buck, right there, that you guys were talking about.
About which season are you talking about?
The catch and release season that's about to be eliminated. And I heard it referred to as an enhancement, and I'm not sure exactly what that means for you guys, but I do want to point out that the season has been in effect since 1981. It's not something new. It's just something that was temporarily suspended because of the ESA listing. And, again, we came to you guys and said there's a way to get this back, and we were successful. The other thing I would like to point out is I looked at your website, and which has been changed, and so it took me a while to find it, but this used to be the legislative mandate on the old site, and I assume it still is, but it says the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife is dedicated to preserving, protecting, and perpetuating the state's fish, wildlife, and ecosystems while providing sustainable fish and wildlife recreational commercial opportunities. These wild fish in the Skagit are free. You don't raise them. You don't spend a penny raising these fish. They're there. They're there. It doesn't cost you a dime. All we have to do is comply with the federal regulation that we got to monitor our fishing. And in case you haven't looked around, this is the way of the future. If I've talked to Brett Barkle, he says, I could open up the Nooksack, the Samish, some other rivers, if we had the money. This is the only way we're going to be able to fish for steelhead in the future. That's it. That's all we've got. And I also got to wonder if next time the general or the legislators decide not to hand you over some money, I just wonder how many hatcheries have been closed in the district of some of those senators on the Natural Resource Committee and the Ways and Means Committee. Close their hatcheries. It's a proper bureaucratic move. It's Trumpist politics, but I think you guys need to fight back somehow, some way. I don't know what to say. We fought hard to get this fishery back. This shouldn't be on the chopping block. This should be the flagship of steelhead fishing in the state of Washington. People, if you go over the stuff, the information that Kurt sent you, 214 different Washington zip codes, 21 different counties in the state. So it's not just a big deal for some folks up there. It's a big deal for a lot of folks everywhere. And this is one thing you need to keep. It needs to be done.
Thank you, Wade.
You mentioned about to be closed. Yesterday afternoon, the commission took up some budget decisions that were subsequent to the phone call, conference call that you mentioned, and came to a recommendation to consider in August that rather than announce a closure of the fishery that as a decision made now, to put that into a supplemental budget request for it to be open next year. And I'll ask the director here to correct anything I've got that's peripherally incorrect about that. But if that is the consensus of the commission in August, then it does put it as opposed to an announcement that it will be closed as a result of a budget deficit to something different that makes it open and part of a supplemental request. That means that it is going to be up to the legislative process, as Commissioner Kehoe says, and it enables you all to talk to your legislators when that session starts in January to make sure that your legislators understand what is at stake in 2020 and beyond. And if I mischaracterize that at all, I think it would be good for these folks who are going to go back and tell people about what may have happened yesterday to have it be accurately portrayed.
So, generally correct. I want to be careful here that no decisions have been made. You all know that. These were proposals on how we operate in the next year, the budget becoming effective July 1. Part of the proposal was to not conduct the Skagit catch and release as a result of failed budget request. The proposal we have on the table right now that was generally supported, I think, by the commission, it was generally supported by the commission to continue further discussion, was to plan on having that fishery next year and asking for the budget next year. So to put it in the low-level terms, we're in a hole, in budget hole, and we're digging fast. And we're going to dig even faster by conducting the Skagit catch and release, which puts us further in the hole, with the hope that next year the legislature will buck up and fund us. If they don't, we'll be that much deeper in the hole. But the plan right now, I shouldn't say plan, the proposal, which was endorsed as a proposal to continue work on by the commission, is to conduct the fishery for, it's built into the budget for the next 2 years with no funding to support it, with the hope of asking the legislature to backfill the hole that we'll create. So you could be great helpful by saying next year that, yes, you're actually out there fishing it, and we need the funding to make sure that fishery continues.
That is good news. I have a request, is if you can get that information out ahead of time, say before the August meeting, so folks can get around and learn about this and get the ins and outs so they become effective lobbyists to move the proposal forward. I can't guarantee there'll be an army of folks out there, but I guarantee there'll be at least two.
What would be helpful also is if you could paint a target on somebody, force the target, okay? Because, again, we may not have hundreds of people, and we may have only tens, but if we get them all pointed at the right person, it could have some influence.
You know, my pitch is to do it early. Is it's on my calendar this year to meet with my legislators during the summer outside the session and develop rapport with them, and to the extent that we want to advocate for those things, the more that we can get in front of these issues outside of the sessions, the more effective we will be. And if we have information in hand, that will help that process a lot.
We'll do our best to get information out there. We'll be cautious.
The balance of that information, as you know, is then it becomes a done deal and we get criticism from the other side that we didn't complete the public process. So it has to be in the form of a proposal. But we can get you some information, and advocating for this fishery can be done with or without our plan. So if they're hearing it from you, that's great.
You know, the agency and the public are working arm in arm towards direction that's more effective than for prosperous.
Yep.
And I understand very really that motivation is going to be different, but to the extent that they understand each other, it's a
questions? Okay, thank you, Wayne. Robert Beausoleil.
Close enough.
That's just think of a line. Beausoleil.
Okay.
Bob will be fine.
Bye, Bob. Take it away, Bob.
I'm here, and I have actually two topics that I'd like to discuss. And the first one is about Dave Grunquist, and I'm sure you all know who he is. And he's been quite instrumental for the recreational fishermen, in particular halibut fishing, in his efforts. And he's done, I think, a remarkable job. I don't know of anyone else in his category, and I understand that he's up for a commission position. I'm not sure if it's this board or not, but I highly recommend that he be appointed because his expertise runs deep, and he cares a lot about the recreational fishermen, and I think he would be just a wonderful addition to this commission, if it, this is the one that...
Bob, this is a commission that he has applied for.
Mm-hmm.
But we have nothing to do with the appointment process. That's totally in the governor's office.
Do you make the recommendations, or are you just...
No, we don't.
We have nothing to do with it.
No. Well,
we all went through that same process of being considered.
Mm-hmm.
Some of us got on, other folks didn't, and that's... It's in the governor's office now, and we hope to hear something about. We have an open seat, and we're waiting.
Well, I hope that he gets on your commission because I think he's a worthwhile individual, and he's quite knowledgeable, and he's expressed it to us in numerous ways. My second point is the treaty tribes and hatcheries. And how that's working into today's fisheries. I think that any treaty tribe that has a river and a hatchery on their reservation should manage those hatcheries. And the reason is because they have entrepreneurial instincts that could be let to run free, and they have a stake in the game. They want to produce fish. It's their livelihood, and they're not going to stop fishing. Lorraine Loomis, the chair of the Treaty Tribes, is actively engaged in trying to keep the hatchery on hers. I think it's the Guy Comish, I can't remember which one it is, but she's going to keep this hatchery running no matter what, and says so. And this is the way that the treaty tribes, as far as I'm concerned, have come across, and they want to keep fishing going. The hatcheries are the answers, and I think that if we, if the state, who's good at legislating, will allow the treaty tribes, who would be good at managing these resources, and let them go with meeting minimum requirements and no maximum. And I think that they would fill our waters with fish. I think they would be happy. I think the pinnipeds would be happy. I think the whales would be happy. And I think I would be happy.
I think that's what we want, Bob.
Well, you know, I don't know what the holdup would be to keep these folks from running these. I think they're quite capable, and they have a vested interest in keeping hatcheries going, and I think that is the answer for everybody in the state, the economics of it, and I think that everybody would be happy if these folks could run their own hatcheries. Just as an example, you got hatchery on the Suez. I know that's a federal hatchery. This hatchery is wildly successful. It produces a huge amount of fish. And the macaw man that facility, and they police it, and they police their river, and they do a dang good job of filling it up with fish, and I think that they could be emulated and used as an example, and I would really like to see this come to be.
Thank you, Bob. Any questions of Bob? Hearing none. Thank you. Lee Whitman.
Good morning, Commission. My name is Lee Whitman. I've recently served on Port Angeles City Council for 4 years. Last time you guys were in town, I did come down and testify, give public comment about halibut, which I'm here again to speak about this morning with everyone. Before I get into that, though, I just want to say welcome to our community, and I do appreciate the Commission's interest in coming to Port Angeles. I'm an avid sports fisherman. I'm not only here for halibut, but I'm also here for our small businesses on the peninsula. You guys know that fisheries is a pretty good tourism draw, and we have it from here all the way west. So there are a lot of people that do come out specifically for the halibut. For a personal experience, I've fished 6 times for halibut this year. I've actually gotten lucky. I've caught 2. Of the 6 days I fished, I probably lost that many days due to the windy weather up here. The idea of having specific dates is still a hindrance to people up here. I'd like to see the commission actually go towards an actual season. With that in mind, I think back to what we talked about previously at your last visit, is there is a safety factor involved when you have specific dates. There are people out there that aren't as good of boaters as they think they are, and they take unnecessary risks. So, a big thing is safety on the halibut open dates. I've probably got 2 questions for everyone here on the commission. I'm not expecting any answers. Maybe it'll stick in your mind. The sports quota, it looks like the Puget Sound catch rate is not going to be met this year, especially with the increased quota that was given because of the Macaw tribe. So specifically the Puget Sound catch quota, which Port Angeles is part of, it doesn't look like we're going to fill it. So what's going to happen with that leftover quota? Are we going to get that rolled over to next year? Does it go away? How is that equated with the grand sum of things when the seasons are set? To begin with, at the beginning of every year. And my second question is the tribes. The tribes, from what I understand, are on a 50-50 share basis with everyone else. So my personal experience that I'm aware of is the tribes are always getting first crack at these fish at every season beginning. So we're supposed to be sharing them. Again, 50-50, there's no way that my 2 hooks can compete with a quarter mile of long line with hooks every 10 to 20 feet. So I would like to see some equity put back in for the sportsman. Why don't we get a second shot or a first shot at these halibut? There has been some discussion that I'm aware of opening up for some additional days in April. But again, I think a season thing, maybe it's 4 weeks, maybe it's 2 weeks, maybe it's 3 weeks, whatever it could be. I just see that as a better opportunity. Someone can plan a vacation up to the peninsula. I have several friends that are in the sports fishing tackle industry, and I know that they suffer financially when that happens, when the people don't come. The good news about the people coming to the Port Angeles area is we're projected at 7.5% increase, which every year continues to grow, and it has grown for at least the last 6 years. So that is a good thing on our horizon as a community. I'd be willing to answer any questions if anyone has any.
I don't have any questions. Your comments about added days, I've heard also that that's being considered. We don't have anyone here from the fish program now, but I would expect Director Suzuwin could pass the word. And I was told that Michelle was talking about a couple more days in April.
Yeah.
But as Lee mentioned.
She is, and we can follow up. I was not paying attention. I was looking from the email from Michelle because it's in here somewhere, but I haven't come up with it. But we are looking at earlier days in April, and the two the federal structure is what we have limiting right now on our ability to open days or more days per week. So we're working on that as well. But I can follow up.
Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. All good comments. Good to hear from you. We appreciate you coming.